Hi, everybody. Connie Willis here with my little show called Willis Ween. Fun stuff that we're talking about. Something else I just want to, I got to let you know about this because I get this myself every day. I love it. It's called Coast Zone. It's our free email newsletter. We send out 6 days a week. It's got recaps of the previous night's shows. Also, really great original articles about paranormal and unusual featured daily on the website. You're really going to find it interesting. Every day you're going to get your little daily bit. You know, we like to call it the Coast Zone. I love it. There's even trivia and fun stuff in there too to keep you kind of going and on your toes and things like that. But I really do enjoy it myself, getting it every day. Kind of keeps you up to date with what's going on and some other neat little stories along the way. So please, it's free, a free email newsletter. Check it out. It's called Coast Zone. You'll be in the zone. You know, I like to say that you're going to be in the zone. So go to our homepage of our website, coasttocoastam.com. We are back and we are taking Paul Sinclair, and we are pulling everything out of him that we can about the werewolves around him. It's the Flixton werewolf stories from hundreds and hundreds of years ago. The werewolves in Flixton and other crazy, crazy things that are going on in the area that he lives around. And he's learning them and he's studying them and he writes about them. And tonight we get to hear about them ourselves. So first time ever on Coast to Coast and already on his second phone. So we've cleared up the phone deal. So Paul, welcome back with your new phone. Hopefully this one will last a little bit longer. Strange things happen when we talk about strange subjects.
Thank you very much.
yeah, that was kind of funky for sure.
Well, Connie, honestly, they were brand new batteries, but I'm on a wired phone now, so we should be fine. You know, we were jumping into these stories, and I was trying to give listeners a breakdown of why the area is special and how the stories have come through and a little bit of history about the area. And everything's quite close to the coast as well, Connie. You know, in most instances, we're only like 4 miles away from the coast at the furthest point. And this coastline around Bridlington, Flamborough, Bempton and Speeton, they're rugged cliffs with absolute massive network of sea caves. Some of them have never been entered. I mean, if we romance with the notion that this was a real living flesh and blood creature breeding and surviving, then I suppose it could function in these areas simply because of how inhospitable they are to man. Anybody who did a bit of research would find that off Flamborough and Bempton, there's more ships being wrecked out at sea than anywhere else in the UK. You can't get close to these cliffs. You know, I'm not saying that that's where these things inhabit, but it's just an angle to look at. But quite close to Flixton, Connie, and 12 miles away, there's a huge area of woodland in North Yorkshire called Harwood Dale. And we can sort of accurately date this to the summer of 2006, and three young men on mountain bikes, sort of setting the trails and doing what, well, all young guys or women, girls as well would do, and having a good sort of ride around these woodland paths. And this one, it may fall into the Bigfoot type category, but it's nevertheless an interesting story. Late evening, but still light, and the bracken's about 4 foot high, and there's all trees all around them as they were cycling down these paths. And the back man became aware and shouted to his mate, says, "Can you see that?" And he says, about 40 foot away from them, they're on the path in the bracken, moving, they're going down quite fast down these hills, is what they described as an upright gorilla. Now, they described it as upright because it didn't appear to be running. And the dark black, fur-covered, very big, and, you know, I think we're talking like over 8 feet tall. The bracken would be 4 foot tall, and they said it was 4 foot above that at least. And this thing's, they described it as like it was on a track. Just, you know, they couldn't see its legs. And they said they were living up around Harwood Dale. They were familiar with most of the the fauna and rocks and lay of the land. They said, and there's no way that it wouldn't have been jumping over fallen branches and rocks, but this thing was just smooth and gliding over the top of the bracken as though it was just fixed, rigid and upright. He says, and we were going as fast as we could, because I said, did it frighten you? He says, hell yeah. He said, we were absolutely terrified. Because it were keeping pace with us, and it was looking at us. That was the strange thing as well. It didn't seem to have to look forward. It was fixed on them. So he said, eventually we got to the bottom of this woodland path, which forked off to the left and to the right. He said, and we went right, sort of choosing the path that would be taken farthest away from this thing, and they left it. That's all they'd seen of it. He asked his two friends if they wanted to talk about it. I got the story off one of the guys. They sort of echoed the story, but they didn't want to come forward with the amount of detail that this man's sort of given me. But I think probably, Connie, we're looking at more something Bigfoot related there. But once again, there's a mystical element to it, in that it's not running in the way, the conventional way we would expect something to run, or moving, should I say, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's we've discussed this before a little bit, you know, we talked a little bit before we did this, and just to say hi to each other. And one of the things that is tough for both of us is there's no words that really work in our language for what this is. It's so hard to describe these things and these events, as well as the beings and the creatures themselves, but you just can't put into words whatever's going on. That whatever it is, it's beyond what we know and what we're supposed to know or see, or what is supposed to be real. And it's so hard to describe these things when you put together. I mean, yeah, we want to focus on the werewolves, but when you put all this together in the area that you are, there's so many things that are going on in this radius. It's, and again, going back to the fact that these radar bases were there, there was a picture that you had that you had sent me, and I guess it's in one of your books, that was a picture of, I guess there were some happenings that went on, some sort of events that were seen, and then the next day, or maybe within the same hours of it, there's this like vehicle, and it's got some sort of satellite dish on it, and it's pointing up to the sky. I mean, it's after these events, this vehicle's there.
Connie, you're talking about something that we saw on July the 25th, 2017. If we may just jump from the werewolves for a moment.
Please, sure.
These vehicles, I got a phone call from a guy called David Hind, who lives in the village of Bempton. He said, Paul, I think you really need to go and check these vehicles out. And I did just that. I took a camera. I got pictures of them, and they were Dodge Rams, and they had a huge green box on the back with a radar dish on the top. I'm trying to do this fast, Connie, because I'm realizing you might want me to carry on with the
take
werewolf.
Take your time.
And put behind that was a huge trailer, which we now know had a generator on it, which were tarped up. Now, the license plates were German, and the stenciling on the units themselves was American. They're in an area, a little nondescript village called Bempton. And they're parked on Blake Howe Lane. Blake Howe, Blake in Bridlington and Flamborough terminology means black. They say something's Blake. So it's Black Howe, Black Burial Mound Lane. It just so happened a few weeks before, I'd got photographs of a triangular impression that appeared in a pea crop that somebody told me about on Blake Howe Lane. On the 25th of July, when these vehicles were seen, and they stayed weeks, by the way, they weren't just there on the 25th of July, the same night we got photographs of lights under the sea. I don't say this lightly, pardon the pun, we have the images, you know, because a lot of people can see these things and can't back it up. Just three points of light under the sea in daylight, and whilst up on the cliff tops, I received a phone call from a guy who asked, you know, is that Paul Sinclair? I know you're interested in the UFO subject. My daughter's just seen a UFO the night previously. And he described the UFO, and this was about 6 miles away. 11 miles away at a place called Garton on the Wolds. And interestingly, just as an after comment, he said, there's something else as well. I said, oh, what's that? He said, well, there's a huge American pickup just parked off-road with a big dish on the top, pulling a trailer. Another one. We later found that there were six of these units around the area when this high strangeness was occurring. Mm. Now, this is at the same time, Connie, that all the sheep were being mutilated. The roe deer were being found mutilated. You know, I've had my feet on ground. I've been going to these areas at 4:30 in the morning to find these carcasses. Probably foolhardy on my part, but as close to the point of death as I can. Because if they're not found fairly quick, other animals will predate on them and it distorts the evidence. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, the area, like you said about the words, you know, people are explaining these lights that are seen off the coast. And, you know, we do not have the vocabulary to describe or justify what people are seeing. You know, a guy called Barry Lyles saw a UFO at Muston, which is very close to Flixton, in 2009. And he said the paper misquoted him about seeing an orange light at one end and an orange light at the other. He said, this thing had lights on it, Paul. He said, but I couldn't begin to... I can see them, but I can't describe them. He says, how crazy is that? He said, because it's just so different to anything we can describe. And that is why, as human beings, we have to find analogies to the closest we can think to what we've seen, even though it doesn't actually fit. And that is, we're a skeptic and a debunker's dream scenario, really, because we're at a loss to describe what we're seeing, and they can just dream up some plausible explanation that fits into the box that most people want to believe, and it's accepted, even if it's a million miles away from what has been seen and experienced. And, you know, that is the dilemma, and until we accept that these things are real, this phenomena, whatever it is, this paranormal soup that we're all immersed in, is real, we're never going to be able to move forward. We need acceptance, even if we can't understand it. Something definitely is happening here. It's over science. You know, it's exotic science. Call it what you want, but it's real and it's happening. The accounts of the Flixton werewolf have not... You don't get so many concentrated accounts of some bizarre creature that seems to just slip in and out of our reality if there's not a grain of truth to it, Connie.
Yeah, and the way you were talking about being describing it, the way we can describe it, I think it was Christopher Columbus's crew or in his logs. You know, you always had to keep logs with ships, right, and boats and things like that. Right. I think that it was in his logs. Or somebody's way, way, way back then, where they would see lights underwater, where a lot of us call it a USO, underground or underwater submerged object, right? But they would describe it as candles in the water, because light to them was with candles, right? So you describe it as how you know things, and
That's correct. He was using the terminology and the knowledge that they had at the time.
That they had at the time. But I got to say, you know, when I looked at some of the stuff that you have, the videos of the lights, I've never seen lights like that. Okay, you know, I saw the lights in the sky and the UFOs and things that you had seen. But you had like this, like, it almost looked like an orange searchlight.
That's correct, and they're seen off the coast. They're actually seen in very close proximity.
Wow.
Probably 4 miles out, maybe. It's hard to tell because I've spoke to coast guards who've observed these coast guard logs I've looked in and lifeboat logs over decades, and they all have reports, 9-hour call-outs, 5-hour call-outs, multiple lifeboats going out to search for boats in distress or downed aircraft. In some instances, bringing in the helicopters from RAF Leconfield because of lights that have been seen by members of the public, MOPs, police officers, coast guards. They've all observed these lights, but they're unresolved. I'm not going to say that everyone's an unexplained phenomena, but they're in every yearbook for every decade. These lights are there. I've termed them intelligent light forms. From the cliff tops, Connie, to the horizon, depending on whereabouts you are at Bempton, because it's 200 to 400 foot cliffs, you've got about 20 to 22 miles to the horizon. And coast guards have told me an interesting point when they have binoculars on these lights is that they're not exhibiting any other, they're an absolutely intense bright light, but they don't illuminate anything else around them, unlike a flare. You know, and they also said if
right.
you can't get a handle on how far out they are, they could be 2 miles out or 22 miles out. We really can't tell. You know, and they're there. They're there in lifeboat logs, Coast Guard logs, newspaper reports. These lights, I've dubbed them in one of the chapters in Truth Proof, the flares that never were. You know, when you get a lifeboat report and it'll give you the initial call out and where the witness saw it, and then the next page is a detailed follow-up of the investigation and where the boats went to search. And then it'll say, with good intent, false alarm with good intent, false alarm with good intent. So what we're actually saying, because we don't have an explanation for what these lights are, we'll just write it off. But in the meantime, we've launched helicopters, we've had thousands and thousands of pounds worth of lifeboats in the water searching for something that we perceived as very real, but we can't find anything, so we'll just say false alarm with good intent. We don't have the vocabulary. That's what we need to jump back to, that one, Connie, you know, because I think it's true.
Yeah, I do too. Now, you are so immersed in all of this, and lucky you, you know, lucky you to be doing all this kind of stuff, following your passion and getting to do this every day. I mean, you know, when I had first talked to you, you were getting ready. It was 4:30 in the morning to you, and you were getting ready to go out into the field by yourself to check out these sheep and see what was going on. But with all this stuff that you have seen and heard from witnesses, and just putting them all together, and the feel, you know, you go out there in the field too, and I'm the same way. I got to go out there and feel it myself, not just see it, hear it, but feel the vibe. And you've done all this, putting all this together. It's all so close in proximity. What are you thinking? Are you thinking it's some, you know, you said interdimensional, maybe extraterrestrial. Are you thinking they're all related? Do you think that there's like more of it's an area where the air is thin, the atmosphere is thin, and there's more portals or something? What are your thoughts?
It could be all related, ultimately. I mean, when I look at the stories, Connie, I mean, you would think that they shouldn't be linked, but they all seem to touch each other. You can't imagine. I know we've jumped from the werewolves, but the sheep that have been mutilated on the beaches, very close, harbour porpoise. They're like a small dolphin, about 4 foot long. They're being discovered. I don't mean right now, but throughout 2017, with huge 3-inch round holes under their jaws. And I'm familiar with sea mammals that are hit with propellers and things from fishing boats, having family who work in Bridlington Harbour. But these are different. These are holes, just clean holes straight through these animals' jaws. You know, and it's a similar injury to the sheep.
That's crazy.
They can't be linked, but somehow they are. So is this phenomena, is it marine-based, land-based, and air-based? It's a massive one to get your head around. I mean, I'm fortunate there's a guy your side of the world in Derek Tyler.
And yeah, Derek.
To Derek, and, well, Derek gets his head around these things. I mean, I don't know if you've spoken to Derek recently, but he's
got
an incredible book, Alien Contact, The Paradigm Shift. And, you know,
yeah.
It's good to speak to Derek for his open-mindedness and get his views, and Deborah Jane East. And there's very few people here in the UK that I don't mean I associate with. I'm sort of here doing my own thing. I don't want to sort of believe I'm channeling messages from the stars, because I've got nothing to tell me any of that. All I can do is present what my eyes are seeing and what my ears are hearing from these witnesses and myself. There's an electronic voice phenomena in this area where the sheep are being mutilated, and I've heard it. It sounds like walkie-talkies. And I don't believe it's people anchored down in the bracken on walkie-talkies. There's a strange electronic voice phenomenon that keeps being heard, and the farmers are hearing it.
Now hold on, don't blow off on that one. I hope that you have some evidence of this, because I certainly would like to hear that in the future. We're talking with Paul Sinclair of the UK, and he's got some incredible stories. I mean, that's why I was so hard. What do we talk about? Well, definitely let's talk about the werewolves, because Halloween's coming up. But he has so many other things going on where he's at. So more to come here as we celebrate Willis Ween on Coast to Coast. I'm Connie Willis. Coast to Coast AM is what you're listening to, and it's Willis Ween. Ooh, a little spookiness. Hope you're enjoying the show. Our annual Ghost to Ghost show is coming up Halloween night, of course. It's a Wednesday in the middle of the week, October 31st. What a special date. You can be on the Ghost to Ghost show. I love that, Ghost to Ghost, Coast to Coast. What you need to do is send us your incredible ghost story if you have one. We're looking for the best of the best. So you think you got what it takes to be on the air? Well, we'll let you know, because if we choose you because you have a great story, then we know you've got a great story. So if you think you have one, a spooky, incredible, unique story, it's a ghost story, you will get to tell it live on the air with George Norrie. Is that cool or what? I love it. It's our annual Ghost to Ghost show. Email your name, phone number, and your best ghost story to halloweenstory@coasttocoastam.com. It's Coast to Coast AM. Connie Willis here. Willis Ween almost coming to a close, but not really. We're still here and we're having a good time. I love that name. Thank you guys for also accepting it and having fun with me about this. So we're talking with Paul Sinclair out of the UK, and he's telling us about the area that he lives in. He's a former carpenter and got a wife and family and, you know, and just also does artwork, and now an author of a couple books and more to come, and just able to enjoy every day of studying and investigating these mysteries that involve werewolves and lights in the sky, as well as lights off the water. And by the way, the video that I saw of that was incredible, because I'd never seen a light like that. It was kind of orangey kind of, and it kind of like moved across the horizon. And even what I remember of the video of it, it looked like they might have seen something of a shadow in the, and there was like a still shot. They stopped it, and it was like a shadow of something that they might have seen, some sort of creature or something. And then you have these sheep that are mutilated. You've heard him mention that along the way, too. At one point, the sheep were all found all piled up on each other. Different stories like that going on. The Bigfoot. It's, you know, things underwater, above water, Bermuda Triangle-ish, and then even the UK, Roswell. But I still, the biggest thing to me, Paul, and thank you for being here with us, but the biggest thing for me, Paul, is all of these things. Now, we've heard all these things before along the way, all over the place. You know, lucky you to be right in the vicinity of all of this that's going on. And we've heard a story similar with Skinwalker Ranch here in the States. You know, the Bermuda Triangle itself, the one that everybody all talks about, as well as, you know, Roswell itself. And you're saying all these are just like that in the UK. However, the most interesting thing of all to me, if the other things aren't interesting enough, is, again, these vehicles that show up that you got pictures of that are in the area where something has happened. And, you know, that's the mystery to me. Somebody knows something, right? And they're checking it out.
Well, I would think so, yeah. I mean, it was uncanny that these Dodge Rams with these huge units on the back of the trailer, you know, two people could have climbed inside this unit and the dish on the top. Maybe it was a military exercise, but how strange that it just happened to coincide with all this other unexplained activity. You know, if you believe in coincidences, then go with that. I believe that there might have been something else to this. Interestingly, I spoke on another radio show on December the 18th, 2017. Quite a large one in the UK, a well-respected guy, and he'd received some emails from a man who'd been walking on the cliff tops at Bempton the week previous. I traced it because of social media, because there was a flash of light seen in the sky and people talked about it. And he read these out live on air on the radio show. And basically this guy had gone for a walk parked up at Bempton and walked along the cliff tops in the night with two friends. They'd done this walk before. So it took about an hour and a half. And at some point during the journey back, he said it was about 8:10, I believe. If I've not got the actual times right, forgive me because I don't have the paperwork in front of me. But there was a huge flash of light in the sky. It lit everything up just for a blink into daylight. They discussed what it could have been and sort of then carried on with their journey. They should have been back at the car at approximately 8:30. And it was, I think, 10:30 when they arrived back at the car. So they'd got this period of missing time. Now, I know that the flash of light was talked about on social media. I don't know this man who contacted the radio station. I have since spoke to him and exchanged some emails. There's more to it. He'd seen the military on the cliff tops. He'd seen them with guns. I haven't seen them with guns. I've got that in the email. And he mentioned various other bits. So, yes, there is such a concentrated amount of activity happening here. I don't think it is quite unique, but I think places like this exist all over the world. I'm probably fortunate, Connie, that, you know, I'm 55 years old, so some people will be working, you know, on the day job quite a bit longer than that. And I'm fortunate that I'm still healthy enough to devote and immerse myself in this 24/7, and that's what I'm doing. So probably I'm highlighting these things. I'm not embellishing them, but, you know, that I'm probably bringing all this stuff out because the people of these local villages, you know, Bempton and Flamborough, they're quite secular. They're very, very secretive type of people. Not bad people, but they keep themselves to themselves. You know, when the animals were being mutilated, it took months and months and months before anybody said anything. It never made the local papers. The police are aware of it. There's over 50 sheep being killed now, as well as deer and badgers and arbor porpoise, as we've just discussed. You know, but they didn't want to say anything. They just wanted to keep it to themselves. But the farmer, unfortunate farmer whose livestock is affected by in this particular area, said he'd got to do because he just couldn't afford not to for insurance purposes. You know, the police have been there with night cameras, you know, trying to find out what's responsible. And another one's been done during the night, and they've seen nothing. It's, once again, it's an incredible area that's steeped with sort of ancient earthworks. And there always seems to be a link to these ancient areas. And like I said previously, the ancient people, they knew about these places. They might not have understood them any more than we understand them. I mean, I don't profess to understand them, Connie, but I think they placed their places of reverence on these lands because they knew they were special.
And they talked about it, though. They talked about it, where our generations now are like, no, don't talk about it. Keep it quiet. They talked about it back then. They named the areas so you would know what that area was when you were walking into it. I like that. I want to know if, you know, it's Scary Hill that I'm going on or something. I think locations need to be named for what they are, and then you know what you're getting yourself into. I don't like when names are changed so that they, you know, there's no reputation of that area. You know, maybe that you can, somebody wants to sell real estate there or something like that. You know, I want to know what I'm getting into. But, you know, some of the things, too, that you've talked about is, you know, when you mentioned the werewolves and Dogman and the Bigfoot, they never went toward the people, you know, as prey. They were kind of minding their own business, doing their own kind of things from the stories. And
I get a sense, Connie, that they'd like creating fear. I think there's a sinister type of intelligence to these things. And I don't know whether I'm not going to get touch on half of these stories, but have I got time to just briefly tell you another one?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I just wanted to make the note that as well, that the sheep had no blood. You know, you know, it's not like these things that are dying, they're not even being eaten. You know, it's just a waste of the life
correct.
Of the sheep's too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, tell your stories.
What predator skins an animal's face, removes its ears down to the bone? Not in all instances. Sometimes the ears are just cut off and removes the eyes. Now, I realise that listeners might be thinking, well, it could be human. There could be, and I can't discount that. But I would suggest that you go out and try and actually catch a sheep. But they might look like little fluffy clouds on legs, but they're quite hard to catch if they put their mind to not to avoiding you. And it's also doing the same thing to roe deer, stags. I've found lots of them. I don't mean one, I've found lots of them. I think I better jump forward, Connie, with these reports.
Yeah.
And
yes.
I've got one from January of 18 this year from a man driving home from Scarborough, and he has to pass through the village of Flixton, once again on the road, the A1039. One of the next villages after Flixton and Staxton is a small village called Foxholes, and that's its proper name, not Foxcover Wood like the previous story at Grindale. And he said he was about 2 miles out of Foxholes, driving home. He said it'd be between 9 and 9.30 at night. Now, I chased this guy for the story because he has a high-profile job. He's on the board of a few directors. He wants to tell the story, but he's terrified that people will know that he's seen a werewolf. He daren't say it. He even writes for a wildlife organisation here in the UK. But that's as much as I'll say about him. So he said he's driving there. He said there was a bit of moonlight. It had been raining, so the road was wet and you could see it shiny. It's night time, just after, in January 18. He says, I became aware of something in my window, the driver's door window. As I'm driving, he says, just sort of, he says, and I turned, he says, and what I can only describe, and his exact words, was a werewolf looking at me. He says, I'm driving at 50 miles an hour. I couldn't get my head round how it was looking at him, and I stressed this several times. We spoke on the phone. He said, this thing was staring at me, had glowing yellow eyes. He says, it filled the window. He says, I was terrified. He says, because it was literally inches, you know, probably 10 or 12 inches from me. He said, once again, this came up, and it keeps coming up. It had the face like a baboon and the mane of a lion. It was travelling at 50 miles an hour. Now, if people choose not to believe this, I can only relate the stories. This was very difficult to get out of this guy. He said it had two huge fangs hanging down from the top of its mouth, like your thumbs, were his words.
And this thing was outside the window? It was outside the window.
The car window, as he's driving along at 50 miles an hour in a Jaguar car.
Running right next to him, looking in.
You what, Connie?
He was running right next to him, just looking at him.
Just looking at him. I couldn't get my head around how this thing could move forward and not look forward. But that's what he's telling me. He said its eyes were glowing because I explained that. I said that to him. I said, well, what was illuminating its eyes? Because obviously it's behind the headlights. He says, I've no idea. He says, but this, what he swore, he says, but this was a werewolf. He said, I've never, ever been as frightened in all my life. He said, I sped up. He said, and I lost it at between 55 and 60 miles an hour. It started to fall back. He said, but I looked in my mirror and I could still see it stood in the road. It was on all fours, I need to add. He never saw it once stand on two legs. But we're only 5 miles out of Flixton, and this thing has been seen in January 2018. And there's another interesting story. You'll have to stop me if time's not allowing. But in February 2018, a young man, about 35 years old, was illegally metal detecting at a place called Towthorpe, which is very close to Foxholes. So this is interesting in itself. he had a terrifying experience. I've met him face to face. We've talked about this. He said he owns a Caucasian Shepherd. Now, I didn't know what one was, so I'm sure a lot of the listeners will, but they're known apparently as the ultimate guard dog. It's a huge, bigger-than-life Alsatian-type dog. They're used in prisons in Russia and things to guard. So he owns this Caucasian Shepherd that he insists is frightened of nothing. So he parked at Towthorpe, where he shouldn't have been in the night, set up his metal detector, and he was detecting along a field, very slowly, trying to find treasure, I would imagine. And there's a wood, small, thin strip of woodland running at the side of the field.
You got 1 minute to tell me.
1 minute?
Yeah, hurry up.
Right.
Tell me.
Basically, he heard growling and things like that. He found two hammered silver coins. He went home. The next night he went in, he sent his German Shepherd in, or his Caucasian Shepherd in, to investigate this. The dog that fears nothing came out cut, screaming its head off. He jumped in the car and went headed home. He's never been back since. There's loads more to tell, Connie, but I think we're about out of time, aren't we?
Yeah, absolutely. See, that's what that was so difficult with you. I was like, what do I talk to? What do we focus on? Because there's just so much to talk to you about. But this is great. You know, it's always good to end on something like this where people want more, and that's for sure. So you've got a couple of books out, and you've got a website. Tell everybody where they can find you, Paul.
The books can be found on Amazon. Just type in Truth Proof into Google. Read the reviews. Don't take my word for it. I think they speak for themselves. The website is truthproof.webs.com. I'm the first to admit I'm pretty useless with social media, but I need to get on there and start adding some information. There's a Truth Proof page on Facebook. Anybody that contacts me, I'll make a great efforts to reply. And if you've got any information to share, hit me with it. I'm quite happy to listen. Thank you.
Hit him with it. I love it. Paul, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here on Coast to Coast. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Paul Sinclair of the UK, all that information, and you can always go to our website, too, and find it. It's all there, too. What an interesting man, for sure. And again, there's so much more to talk about. I hated to end it on that. I'm so, so sorry. So thank you, Benjamin Radford, as well, earlier, and Paul Sinclair, who we just talked to. If you enjoyed the show, I hope that you guys let us know. Willis Ween, maybe we'll get to do this next year as well. That was fun. It was great. Wow. Wow. I wanted to hear more of that story. And you know what? We'll definitely have to get him back. So we will definitely do that. Thank everybody for being here tonight and enjoying Willis Ween with me from the KOA News Radio Denver studios. I want to thank everybody that's helped me out with this. Bill May, Donna Walker, Tim Banal, Lex Lonehood, Stephanie Smith, Dan Galanti, Angie Sillo, Tommy Danheiser, Sean LeDesur, Nathan Staten, Lisa Lyon, George Knapp, Mike Wolf, Greg Foster, Earl Wilcox, and George Norrie, of course. Until we meet again here on Coast to Coast, I hope you join me on Blue Rock Talk for sure. But until then, keep watching the night skies and continue with me to seek out the strange and uncover the unknown. For Coast to Coast AM, I'm Connie Willis.